following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxie bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening. This is a ForceCast Microcast.
Eyes, Magistrat.
Brought to you by TheForce.net and RebelScum.com.
You may fire when ready.
Star Wars Cantina.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
And right now we are extremely excited and humbled to be joined by Timothy Zahn, author in the Star Wars universe and even beyond the Star Wars universe. Tim, thanks so much for being with us. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, just in case there's anybody out there who's been living under a rock and hasn't heard your name or doesn't know what you've done for the Star Wars universe, why don't you just give us a quick background on what you've done so far and where we're headed?
Okay, well, I made my debut into the Star Wars universe in 1991 with Heir to the Empire, the first book of what has become known as the Thrawn Trilogy. These were the first novels that Lucasfilm ever allowed to be written that would take place after Return of the Jedi and include all the major movie characters. So it was kind of a big splash. It was exciting and in some ways terrifying for me. I followed up the Thrawn trilogy some short years later with the Hand of Thrawn duology, Spectre of the Past and Vision of the Future. And then I did a kind of a linked duology, Survivor's Quest and Outbound Flight, which were, as George himself did, prequels. I did Outbound Flight as sort of a prequel to Survivor's Quest. Allegiance is my eighth Star Wars book, and it takes place between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, a territory that hasn't been explored all that much.
Now, you said it was terrifying to take on this, the daunting task of being the first one to write the original characters after Return of the Jedi. Were you a fan before you started?
Oh, yes. I had seen all the movies, obviously. I saw Star Wars, the original, 12 to 15 times when it came out in theaters. It was a great date movie. I took quite a few women to see it in that time. I was always a fan. In fact, when I started writing full-time in 1980, just to try to change careers, one of the pieces of music I would listen to as I wrote was the Star Wars and ultimately the other two soundtracks as well.
Do you find that really helps to generate the imagery in your head, not only for Star Wars, but just in general, kind of bring you along in a story that you're thinking about?
It certainly helps get me in the mood for Star Wars. It's useful for other science fiction I work on at any given time. But I don't need the soundtracks to get in the mood for Star Wars. I can listen to pretty much any of the standard repertoire of classical and movie soundtrack sorts of things. But certainly if I'm feeling a little bit slow on what I'm writing that day, John Williams always perks it up.
One thing I've noticed with the Star Wars books that you write, you seem to capture the classic characters in a way that I can't really say many other or any other writers have been able to capture. Do you have any methodology that you go through to be able to get their voices the way that you do?
Well, that was one of the two things that terrified me at the first time I was offered this project was I knew I had to capture the movie characters. Otherwise, I would be writing an adventure of two guys named Luke and Han, and I wouldn't be writing Star Wars. And I knew that would be a waste of everybody's time, mine, the publishers, and the readers. As to technique, I have a secret system that predates the offer by several years, something that Bantam didn't even know when they hired me to do the books. We had discovered that a good way to keep our young son quiet on long car trips was to let him watch a certain, whatever one of his favorite movies was, we would make an audio tape of the movie. You know, put the movie into the VCR, put up a tape recorder right by the TV speaker, and just record the whole thing. And he would then sit in the back seat, play with his Legos, listen to the soundtrack, visualize the movie, and be quiet for an hour and a half to 2 hours.
That's a good technique.
It worked really well. But what it did is, however many times I've seen the Star Wars movies, I've heard them that plus 5 or 10 times. So I had an ear for how the characters spoke, the phrasing, everything else. I'd heard them without the distraction of the visuals. And I really think that gave me an unexpected edge when I was actually writing the books.
Now, and you said that was the one, that was one of two things. What was the other thing?
Oh, the other thing was I didn't want to do the same sort of thing Lucas had already done in the prequels. So I had to come up with a story that wasn't what he'd done or really close to what he'd done and yet felt like Star Wars.
And
it,
with
you know, every universe has its own feel to it, you know, Star Wars, Star Trek, Buffy, you know, Firefly, anything. If you don't capture that sense, it's going to feel flat to the readers.
Yeah. With that that time when Bantam was starting up your books, and Dark Horse was also kind of revitalizing the comics as well. Did you have any, was there any talk about working together to make a more cohesive story between the comics and the books, or were they always two separate areas?
Well, there were some parts in the early, early in that process where they wanted me to coordinate with Dark Horse. And some of the things in the original script I thought were not what I thought of Star Wars, and there are a couple things that kind of violated the laws of physics, and I pointed these out to my editor, and we kind of went our own separate ways. I think they did clean up some of those things in later scripts. But no, there was some talk about it, and it didn't actually happen. So they're kind of, they're different but and separate, but of course, since they're both authorized by Lucasfilm, of course, they're both right.
Exactly.
That's always an important aspect of things.
Right.
So when you kind of are getting ready for a new project within the Star Wars frame, how do you go about it? I mean, how do you do your research? How do you choose where you're going to do choose the era, choose the people that are going to be in the novels? How do you decide and break down this gigantic universe into what you want it to be?
Mostly, though, the time slot decisions have kind of made for me. The Thrawn trilogy was to start 3 to 5 years after Jedi, so that placed that one. The Hand of Thrawn, just because of the way the other writers had been filling in that period, I knew I had to place that about 10 years after the Thrawn trilogy. What they wanted for Survivor's Quest was a Luke and Mara story, so that obviously has to take place a couple of years after the wedding, and we needed to put it before New Jedi Order. Outbound Flight, that era is also fixed. So the only one I had a lot of choice in was Allegiance. And when we were talking about that book, they had only, three or four slots left in the publishing schedule that hadn't been taken, and they had limited numbers of slots in the history they were willing to open up. So this one looked, the space between New Hope and Empire was about the least mined, shall we say. Only the Marvel comics and Splinter of the Mind's Eye had been in that era. So that one looked like a good, safe place to play around in. So really, the choices have kind of been made for me, and it's just been a challenge to fit it into the right feel for that particular era.
Now, did you look at any of that, speaking kind of directly at Alliance, and since that was the one that kind of fits in to what's going on now, did you look at any of the Marvel comic stuff? Did you look at Splinters of the Mind Eye and kind of think about that at all, or was that, did that not play anything?
No, they wanted me to try to fit in as best I could. They sent me a huge stack of Marvel comics they had sitting around. I read, probably a third of them or so, just to get the feel and look and see if there were holes in the timeline that I could slip my stuff into. My original plan had been to set it vaguely, but probably only 3 or 4 months after the Battle of Yavin. when I got the edited manuscript back for my final polishing and everything, it looked like they were putting it more like a year after A New Hope, which is fine. It just apparently somebody decided that we want to leave a little more gap to make sure all the other things fit okay without being superseded. You know, it's tempting sometimes to say, well, the Marvel comics don't exist, or, you know, something else doesn't exist. But I don't remember who it was, somebody at Lucasfilm pointed out, everything is somebody's favorite, and you don't want to just throw something out just because you don't want it at this point. If you can fit it in, much better to do it that way.
Yeah, we have certainly found out through doing this podcast that there's always somebody that's got their favorite, and even if we're talking about something that we particularly don't like, there's somebody out there that's going to send us an email and say, hey, you know, I like those, I really enjoy that. So yeah. I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, never destroy anything just because you feel like it. You know, if it has to be relegated to alternate universe, so be it, but you try real hard to hang on to things. This is not the Vogons destroying Earth to make way for a hyperspace bypass, after all.
I'm sure they've thought about doing something like that in the Star Wars universe at some point, too. So
I hope not. Somebody would probably want to do Vogon poetry.
Well, I got to say, I got a chance to read Allegiance. Del Rey had sent over an advanced copy, and I'd been eager to read it back when you made the announcement at Celebration 3 that you were writing it. You thought you were going to be doing this book called Allegiance, and you kind of teased out that it was going to be with classic characters, with Mara Jade, and I was like, wow, I'm first in line to read that, because I'm a big fan, and I think... The classic characters, it was great seeing them again, and as one of my friends pointed out, it was great to see Chewbacca back.
Parenthetically, that was one reason I want to do this one, because I really like Peter Mayhew, and mm-hmm. since Chewbacca isn't going to be anywhere in any future books past Vector Prime anyway, I wanted to give him a really good role here as best I could and have him do some really clever stuff.
He did, yeah, and you just see, for I don't want to spoil anything for anyone that hasn't read it yet, but I think Chewie's got a really good role in here, and Chewbacca fans will be happy. Mara Jade fans, there's a lot of great stuff going on with Mara, and then I really enjoy the new characters that you wrote of the Stormtroopers,
Hand of Judgment, they call it.
Hand of Judgment, yes. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came up with the idea for the Hand of Judgment?
Well, as I mentioned briefly in acknowledgments in the book, it came out of a conversation I had about, I think, 3 years ago with Alban Johnson, who was the founder of the 501st. He had been watching Band of Brothers and was chatting with me about what he thought would be a great TV show, sort of a Stormtroopers in their... you know, large ship with all their support people going around doing Imperial business or whatever, that same kind of camaraderie and unit feel. Okay. My brain took this and shrunk it down, thinking that would be interesting, but what I would prefer to do would be sort of a combination of The Fugitive and Zorro, where you've got these guys on the run, and... they can appear in civvies, in public. Nobody knows who they are. But when they see trouble, they can go back to their ship, suit up, and go kick butt. So that's basically where that came from.
Almost like the A-Team.
Yeah, okay, combination of Fugitive Zorro and the A-Team.
Fugitive Zorro, A-Team, and probably a couple others that we're missing. But that makes
any costume superhero.
Yeah, exactly. That makes for such an interesting element in the Star Wars universe, because everybody has defined roles by the uniforms that they wear. So them wandering around without their uniforms on is definitely a different take on things.
Well, and also,
yeah, and I thought it was a good a choice. I mean, I don't know if this was you made this choice consciously or it was dictated to you, but just to have them not be clones or actually have any of them be clones. They all appeared to be like enlisted people in the Stormtrooper Corps.
Well, I knew I didn't want to do clones, and actually I had done clones in Vision of the Future with the clones of Baron Fell, who are out farming, kind of the ready-made fifth column that Thrawn had planted for the invasion that he was expecting. But yeah, I certainly did double check with Lucasfilm first, and it was already established that by this era, the stormtroopers were a mixture of clones and recruits. So I didn't have to argue that. That was already in place.
Yeah. Okay.
And kind of clears up some questions of with us. And obviously, you had the same question that was in fact the case that as the ranks thinned out after the Clone Wars, they were replaced not with clones but with troops and kind of a mixture of both. Mm-hmm. Which is an important aspect to the story because it kind of obviously pulls your part in, and then any further things that have anything to do with the stormtroopers, it gives that human aspect to it that is important as well. I was thinking, actually, as we were kind of going through, that you have two very differing problems that you're attacking in a lot of your novels, where you already have talked to us about writing the established characters, the characters that you've heard before. How does that compare to writing the characters that you're creating? Because obviously, two of the most important characters in the EU and in the Star Wars universe are Mara Jade and Grand Admiral Thrawn. And so those are important characters that you had to have the framework for, that there wasn't anything out there. How does that compare as you go through?
Well, it's not really any different than creating characters from my own universes. The trick is you have to create Star Wars characters that feel like they fit in the Star Wars universe.
Sure.
Who can interact with, you know, Han, Luke, and Leia without it feeling forced or feeling like, you know, like the major characters are in color and these guys are in black and white, or something jarring that would feel wrong. So it's simply a matter of coming up with a character and a personality and a task in the plot to be done that will fit in with that, the established characters, with the established feel of the universe. And if you're really lucky, the reader can hear John Williams' soundtrack as they read it.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because I find myself doing that, and sometimes even humming it out loud when I'm going through a story or reading a comic or doing anything along those lines. And actually, that's one thing that I love about the audio interpretations of the books, that sometimes they add that element in for you and it gives you that entire Star Wars feel. It's always nice to be able to think about what tune is going to be coming through when you're reading it yourself. And that's something that separates Star Wars from a lot of other things, is that you have that whole universe and the soundtracks and the visualization to kind of add to your reading experience.
And that's one of the great things about doing Star Wars. I mentioned my panic at getting the characters right. The saving grace of all that is, because they are well known, the universe is well known, if I can get it 80% right, the reader will fill in the other 20%. So there's a little bit of actual buffer in the whole process.
Yeah.
A little safety net.
And I was telling Pete the other day, when I was doing a review of the book, there was a point when I was reading the story, I think it was towards the end, with Luke and Han doing something, and I could just kind of see Luke in A New Hope, where he's coming out of the garbage compactor, kind of tousling his hair off. That was just kind of the fresh farm boy aspect of Luke. He was still shining through. He hadn't been worn down by years of war or, you know, becoming a Jedi Master and all the stuff that you're seeing with him now in the New Jedi Order and the Legacy of the Force books. He just had this freshness about him, and I mean, that really came through, and like I told Pete, it's like coming home again to be able to see these characters. I'm only seeing them in my head, but I think they were written well enough that whether I'm visualizing elements from the movie or I'm hearing the soundtrack in my head, you know, it's really, the book is really coming to life right there in front of me.
That is the goal. I'm supposed to be doing my job such that you forget you're looking at bits of black ink on white paper and you're into the story.
Yeah.
And if I can succeed in that, then I've done my job.
Well, and Pete also mentioned, or actually didn't mention, one of the other characters that I really enjoy, and that's Talon Card.
Yeah, Card is a punster all the way from square one. When I started this tour, I had, I think two ideas I would pitch to Lucasfilm if they ever asked me to do another Star Wars book. Now, at this point, midway, after talking with people, I've got about seven ideas. That may be eight. Yeah, I'd like to do something more with Card. I would have to, of course, craft the story so that he fits into it. But,
sure.
Something in the same era would be interesting, especially since George Cardass might still be around as the head of his group. So there are some, or just having disappeared, left the thing in potential chaos. So, yeah, Card would certainly fit into this era in an interesting way. And again, it's all theoretical, and until and unless Del Rey and Lucasfilm invite me to play in George's sandbox again.
Well, we all definitely hope that happens. And now you actually played or posed as Talon Card, did you not?
Yes, that was Mike Stackpole's fault. He thought it would be great for me to pose for a Decipher Card as Talon Card while he would do Corin Horn. Shannon McArdle was already out there. We could put her in as Mara Jade. And Mike, with his infinite diplomacy and political savvy, managed to talk Decipher into flying us out for that. That was incredible fun.
No, that sounds like it would just be great. And for those of you who haven't seen the photo, it's on the Decipher Card. And it's a great little cantina scene, and it is, without a doubt, so Star Wars that you can barely even stand it. And it's nice that you are the physical representation of one of the characters that you had.
Yeah, I've told people I've been on the New York Times list. I've got a my picture on a trading card, and I've been a Jeopardy question. You know, my life is complete.
That's about as good as it gets. Kind of going back to the Talon Card character, the names of the ships, like You Wanna Buyer, Starry Ice, Wild Card, where does that come from as far as do you kind of just reach for something when it comes to that, or is that something that you always enjoy doing?
Oh, it's basically my warped sense of humor coming out. I look for, as you say, something that seems reasonable or something that would be appropriate for in his point of view, and then mangle it into a pun of some sort. Just the sort of character Card is. It kind of adds a little dimension to him, I think. You wonder what kind of person he'd be to fly with.
Yeah, and it's almost like getting to name a boat several times. You know, you get to name your own ship and just do it over and over again as soon as you can find something you like. So,
yeah, that's a point. I'm not ever likely to own a boat, so I get to do it without all the expense involved. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Well, you know, we'll take it any way we can get it. And, sure. You know, I likely won't be able to name a boat either, so I'll have to find some outlet. I don't think it'll be writing books in the Star Wars universe, but you never know. I kind of wanted to go back because the book that I just finished was Outbound Flight. I am unfortunately a very slow reader, so I haven't quite caught up on Allegiance yet since it just did debut not too long ago. And
up with everything these days.
Absolutely. But I really enjoyed Outbound Flight from the standpoint of the prequel sense of it. I was hoping that you could kind of go into that a little bit. It's always one thing, obviously, that everybody in the Star Wars universe found out is that it's kind of hard to tell a backstory on somebody that is already established. So you're not sure, you know, even though you know where they came from, it's more difficult to draw out that story. How did that work out for you?
You're talking specifically about Anakin Obi-Wan, I presume.
Well, Anakin and Obi-Wan, and even just Grand Admiral Thrawn, where we kind of knew the backstory but hadn't seen him in that setting yet.
Oh, okay. Well, originally it would have been a little bit trickier because they had wanted Outbound Flight to be published between episodes 1 and 2, where it actually fit in the timeline. And then the schedule got rearranged, and it wound up being set for after Revenge of the Sith. So that meant that when I wrote it, I had, again, two endpoints, just as in Allegiance. I had Episode 1 and Episode 2 to see where Anakin and Obi-Wan started and where they would end, so kind of interpolating their characters into the middle of that. Thrawn, again, is, I mean, he's my character, so I know him well enough that it didn't take a lot of effort to put in backstory and to kind of regress him, what was that, 20, 30 years or so, 25 years, whatever, from where we had seen him in the Thrawn trilogy back to this point. I knew what he'd been doing. I knew the politics of the situation and as far as the Chiss were concerned and all that. So I simply had to come up. Mostly the problem with Thrawn is right coming up with the tactics and the strategies. It's a lot of fun, but it gets harder each time I do it.
Yeah, it's hard to be a master technician all the time and a tactician and all the time and find a way to outsmart your opponent that many different times.
And Thrawn's definitely smarter than I am, so I have to really struggle to get him to look good.
Yes, well, and he comes off very well, especially in that situation where he is kind of getting other things moving along in his own career, but then just decides, hey, it's time for me to maybe move on a little bit. And it really was an interesting take in that whole situation, because you knew that there was, or you know, we had known that there was some tension between he and his race prior to him leaving. And so it's interesting to see that whole thing play out. And I thought that came off very well. And for those of you who haven't gone out and read the book, I would certainly recommend it. And it seems like we're kind of going back in time a little bit, but I kind of wanted to hit the Thrawn trilogy and the Hand of Thrawn duology and just kind of see, you know, we talked a little bit about where your how you came into that and where that came from, but wanted to kind of go a little bit deeper into it. And once you had that first book under your belt, the Heir to the Empire, had you always seen it? Obviously, I'm sure they came to you looking for it as a trilogy. Was that how it kind of came out? Or
yes, it was going to be like the movies, one story in three volumes. So it was a continuing story. I had to find breakpoints and such for it.
Okay.
But yeah, it was always to be one complete story, not three separate stories kind of linked together.
When you kind of go through not only those books, but also the other ones that have come subsequently, there always seems to be several different areas taking place that all kind of intertwine towards the end, several different sub-stories that kind of intertwine at the end, which definitely mirrors the films. How do you work backwards from that? Do you think about, okay, this is where I want them to end up, and here's where we need to start them? Or are you just able to kind of do find your way in the maze, so to speak?
No, I definitely, before I start, among other things, Lucasfilm insists on an outline. So before I start, I outline the whole thing, all the major plot lines, the major characters, where some of the twists and turns are going to come, and always where I'm planning to end it, because I would feel nervous not knowing where the thing was going to start with. Things get changed along the line, but I always know where I'm aiming for. It's interesting you mentioned the climactic parts where three or four things are going on at the same time. Someplace as I get into that whole area, I generally, along with my outline, I generally do a timeline as well, certainly as I go along, keeping track of where everybody is, when, and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But as we reach that climactic section, usually, three, four, maybe five chapters, I actually stop and I know what I'm doing, but I want to organize which section I do in order. So I will say, I will have on my timeline, okay, Luke is doing this section, this part, it's, you know, a line or two. Then we move to Han's point of view for what he's doing, then over to Pelion, then to Mara and Luke, then to Leia. You know, so I have the whole thing scaled out. I don't have to think, well, who should I do next? I've got it all laid out for me so I can keep from leaving somebody dangling too long before I get back to their part of the story. So that actually makes it easier than I just look at my timeline. Okay, I finished this section. Who's next? Ah, Han. Okay, here we go.
That's fantastic advice for any young writers out there that are thinking about throwing their hand in the ring. You've got to have that plan, and making it as easy for yourself as possible is the way to go. And
not just making it easier, but keeping yourself from getting confused and tangling yourself up, because it's easy. The reader is going to read these things a lot faster than you are writing them.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to spend a couple of days on these two sections, then I have to look back and figure out who I need to go to next. It's much easier to have everything laid out nice and neat and kind of symmetric, and because that's how the reader is going to come up with it, and you know, similar to that speed.
Jay, of course, emailed me with another question because he didn't want to be left out.
Okay.
But he wanted to check and see if you were going to be working in comics at all again. And he really enjoyed the Mara Jade series and was hoping that that would be something you might look into, since it's a shorter set of stories that can support some of the peripheral characters and, you know, not maybe put as much pressure as doing a novel would.
Well, several years ago, Mike Stackpole and I came up with another six-part comic that we pitched to Dark Horse. It apparently died on the vine. I have subsequently redone it as a four-part story, which I suggested to Star Wars Insider, and I haven't heard back from them in a couple of years on that either. So it doesn't look like anybody wants me to do comics. I would like to. It's a fun medium. It's kind of halfway to movies, where I can put in visual stuff that the alert reader will notice, but it's, you know, it's not so obvious as having written it down in print in a book or a story.
Mm-hmm.
But at the moment, apparently they've got all Star Wars comics they want and aren't interested in anything from me. So that may change.
Well, I'm sure at some point, if it does never picked up, that'll be something in the Star Wars archives that will find its way to the surface sometime later, and everybody will be wondering why it didn't get picked up and going, oh, how's the story not out there? So, you know, I certainly hope that that happens. And, you know, I know that you had stated that you didn't have anything else in the works as far as playing in the sandbox goes. But is there anything else that kind of is tingling your mind besides getting back to Talon Card that might jump back out on the docket for you?
Well, the number one idea I've got right now that I would like to pitch Lucasfilm if they approach me again would be a sort of sequel to Allegiance, connecting it to Survivor's Quest, wherein Thrawn slips back into the Empire during the between first and second or episodes 4 and 5, kidnaps our five stormtroopers from Allegiance, and takes them back out with him to the Empire of the Hand to use to form the core of his new 501st.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's been basically the reaction I've gotten from mostly all the 501st people I've mentioned it to. Aha, and when can we see it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that was my very next question is, let's see. I have no clout whatsoever in the Star Wars universe. However, on this show, I will put my good pitch in for that novel to happen, because obviously bridging the gap between those two would be great. And as Jay said, following the further adventures of those five guys is something I think a lot of not only the 501st guys, but everybody that's on the peripheral would enjoy as well.
Well, I certainly hope that the Stormtroopers will connect with the general Star Wars readership, but only time will tell if I've managed to do that.
Well, and if history shows us anything, it's that that is something that you've been able to accomplish time and time again, is just being able to connect with the reader on so many different levels. And it's amazing that you continue to be able to do that over the years, and not only with that, but with your other novels. And I just can't say enough about how outstanding of a career that you've had. And you know, I have to admit I was nervous giving you a call, because it's like I'm talking to Timothy Zahn. This guy is you know, next to Uncle George, he's as good as it gets. So I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us for a little bit, and I apologize that Jay wasn't able to stay with us, but this has been really great, and I hope at some point you'd enjoy coming back on again.
You are way too kind, and of course I'd be happy to come on.
Hopefully next time it'll be to pitch your newest book, which is connecting Allegiance and
Lucasfilm listens to the fans.
Yeah.
So if the fans decide they want it, you know, we'll see.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you again. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.